The West's unilateral sanctions and attacks against different countries around the world have had a boomerang effect on the Western countries themselves. According to reports, supply chain disruptions caused by the war in Ukraine, rising fuel costs, and the impact of heat waves on crop yields have all contributed to increased costs for producing and processing food. Farmers have been unable to boost supply, leading to expectations that costs will remain above the levels before the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Global food companies have paid out nearly £15 billion to shareholders. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Common Dreams noted the world's biggest food companies have paid out nearly £15 billion to shareholders as the spiraling prices leave desperate families struggling to afford to eat. Open Democracy revealed Nestlé, Unilever, Associated British Foods, Mondelez, and Archer Daniels Mill and Company, ADM, have raked in £20 billion in profits in the space of a year while all raising average food prices. Four of the five multinationals, which between them own thousands of popular brands such as Twinings, King's Mill, and Cheerios, have all signaled consumers should expect further price rises. Only ADM has not. The firm's profits would be enough to fill £9.8 billion funding gap twice over that is currently facing the United Nations World Food Programme, WFP, which aims to provide food for 160 million people facing poverty by the end of the year. The WFP said it costs 44% more for it to buy food than it did in 2020. The bonanza for food corporations comes amid a 40% increase in the number of people in the UK forced to turn to food banks since April, according to Trussell Trust. The charity, which supports food banks nationwide, has warned it can no longer rely on donations to meet rising demand for energy food parcels. Frédéric Mousseau, an economist who has worked for international relief agencies, including Oxfam and Action Against Hunger, told Open Democracy, "How can we accept that a handful of corporations record such huge profits while you have billions of people who are already struggling to survive?" Food prices in the UK have increased by an average of 16% in the past year, with the cost of some staples, such as bread and milk, rising by a third. The prices of vegetable oil and pasta have soared by more than 60%, the highest increases among the lowest-cost groceries tracked by the Office of National Statistics. The UK's biggest producer of vegetable oil, Edible Oil Limited, is jointly owned by American grain giant Archer Daniels Mill and Princess, a UK subsidiary of Mitsubishi Corporation. The former has seen its profits rise by 48% this year and paid out the equivalent of £1.5 billion to its shareholders in dividends and share buybacks in the first half of this year alone. The UK's highest-grossing food company, Associated British Foods, ABF, has also paid out £500 million to shareholders. This month, ABF's chief executive, George G. Watson, who will receive £2.2 million in remuneration this year, told investors at the firm's annual results presentation, revenues benefiting from prices increases and operating profit was solid. We've had to recover a huge amount of input costs from customers that don't like giving you price rises. We've done that job really well, but it's not finished. Some food multinationals have claimed they have tried to soften the blow to consumers when passing on costs. Nestlé chief executive Mark Schindler said the company had made a point of acting responsibility with price increases when announcing its half-year results in July. Nestlé reported half-year profits of £4.5 billion, 11% fall from the same period last year. But the firm has paid out £8.5 billion to shareholders in the form of share buybacks this year, while raising prices by up to 7.5% on its products, which include a top-selling baby formula. These corporations are very adept at rhetoric that doesn't have a lot of substance, Philip Howard, a professor at the Department of Community Sustainability at Michigan State University, told Open Democracy. They talk about balance, but if there is a choice between increasing their power and doing the right thing, increasing power is going to win every time. That's what the shareholders demand. Unilever, a British Dutch multinational that also produces household cleaning and personal care products, has made £4.3 billion in profits this year, a 4% increase on last year. The company told investors it has raised its prices by 12% to cover increased costs. At the same time, it has paid out £1.3 billion to shareholders. The UK snack firm Mondelez, which owns Cadbury, has reported a 10% rise in profits this year, bringing in £6.9 billion. The company has handed £2.8 billion to shareholders in the form of share buybacks and dividends, while raising its prices by 11% in the last quarter. The shareholders who own these companies expect growth every year and a return on their investment. Maybe that makes sense for companies selling phones or TVs, but food is not a commodity. It's what everyone of people depend on to survive, and these corporations' need for ever-growing profits poses existential questions for humanity, said Musao, who is also a policy director at the Oakland Institute, a U.S. think tank. Supply chain disruptions caused by the pandemic, the war in Ukraine, rising fuel costs, and the impact of heat waves on crop yields have all contributed to increased costs for producing and processing food. But food experts argue excessive commodity speculation rather than shortages remains largely to blame for spiraling costs. A Unilever spokesperson said, in this challenging environment, when we are facing the highest input cost inflation in over a decade, making price increases is not easy, and we are very mindful of the pressure that consumers are under. We always take a responsible and considered approach to pricing, and there are a number of levers we pull to offset input cost inflation, such as promotions, pack sizes, and ingredient changes. A Nestlé spokesperson told Open Democracy, we are absorbing cost to tune of billions of dollars as reflected in the notable decline of gross profit margin. We have been doing everything we can to find cost-saving measures, for example, cutting marketing expenses and finding new efficiencies in production and distribution. Our priority remains to ensure that consumers have affordable access to the products and brands they know and love while still paying fair prices to our suppliers. including farmers and small companies, for their sustainably produced raw materials. A spokesperson of ABF, which reported £399 million profits from its grocery division for the year ending September 30, a 3% decrease on the previous year, said, "We strive to make our food as affordable as possible. Like a lot of businesses, we are encountering extreme inflation and increased energy prices. Last year, ABF had to absorb inflation of £1 billion, and the group will have to absorb the same amount in the current year. As a result, we have unfortunately had no choice but to increase prices to retailers, and despite this, the margin in our grocery business is clearly down. Businesses have no choice but to pass costs on where they can, give the scale of the inflation. As we sell to retailers, we do not set the chef price for goods, the retailers do." Mondelez and ADM did not respond to a request for comment. Financial Times noted, "Climate change and the war in Ukraine are set to keep food prices at far higher levels than before the COVID-19 pandemic. Despite signs of moderation in global commodity markets, economists and agriculture experts have warned wholesale food prices have stabilized over recent months, raising hopes that the surge in retail costs of staples such as rice, bread and milk seen in the past 2 years would diminish in 2023. The latest update of Food Price Index of internationally traded agricultural commodities, compiled by the UN Food and Agricultural Organization, FAO, published recently, posted its 8th consecutive monthly decline in November since peaking in March. The November index showed prices were just 0.3% higher than a year earlier. However, the stabilization in international markets is yet to translate into lower inflation for households around the world. Even if this does happen over time, costs are likely to remain higher above pre-pandemic levels as the war and weather events limit producers' ability to take advantage of higher prices by increasing supply." Carlos Mera, senior analyst at Rabobank, said, "Normally the cure for high prices is high prices. We do see weakness in demand, but production has not been very elastic. After several years of bumper crops, thanks to favorable weather conditions, grain prices firmed during the pandemic because of hoarding by consumers, companies, and governments. Even before the Russia-Ukraine conflict, which caused prices to spike because of the importance of both countries in producing commodities such as wheat, persistent droughts in key growing regions had pushed prices higher. Both the Ukraine conflict, which has raised the cost of fossil fuels and energy-intensive fertilizer production, and the third year of the La Nina weather phenomenon, the cause of severe droughts in the US, Argentina, and Europe, have hit farmers, curbing their ability to increase output. The supply response has been slow. Farmers around the world are applying less fertilizer, and in places such as Africa, this will lead to lower production," said Joseph Schmidhaber, Deputy Director of Trade and Markets at FAO, which expected grain production to be lower next year than in previous years. The FAO is also concerned that there could be a global rice shortage next year if producers fail to find enough fertilizer. Catherine Neese, Chief European Economist for PGIM Fixed Income, a fund manager, said lower wholesale prices would not feed through into retail costs quickly as food production was very energy intensive with the impact of higher oil and gas prices resulting from Russia-Ukraine conflict lingering. Consumers in emerging markets and developing economies, who typically spend a relatively large proportion of their income on food, are particularly exposed. Many countries in Africa and the West Asia region are reliant on the Black Sea region for imports and tend to have weaker and more volatile currencies. Most global food commodity transactions are priced in dollars, potentially amplifying the effect of higher costs on domestic food prices. Although the extension in November of the Black Sea grain deal between Russia and Ukraine, which ensures at least some of the country's food commodities reach international customers, has lowered the risk of further price spikes, geopolitical conditions remain precarious. Meanwhile, measures used by economists and traders to assess the availability of commodities, such as the stock-to-use ratio, indicate supplies of wheat at the lowest level in more than a decade. Glauber said, "I don't think we are out of the woods yet." Prefeet agreed, it said. It remains uncertain how the combination of harvest disruptions, energy prices, and monetary policy will play out. However, things could get worse before they get better.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamidi.
Islamidi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. My dear sisters and brothers from different corners of the world, welcome to your station, Youth Station.
Wa alaikum assalam and assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is Asma's co-host, Zainab.
Yes.
Very, very glad to be here.
My lovely co-host.
Same here. There's no doubt in it.
How are you doing, Zainab?
Alhamdulillah, I'm fine. How are you?
The weather is fantastic, right? Yeah, it's cloudy.
Yeah.
With some chances of raining.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting to go out these days. Just some days, like the days of autumn, it was the time of exams. And I don't know if you have the same memories or not, but I guess every single creature has been through schooling and exams for at least once.
All students, I must say, have gone through this chilling.
Yeah, the time. Cheating thing. I was giving a long introduction, and then you hit the nail directly.
Yeah, in the chilling month, the chilling effect. Come on and give exams.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I have also had all my exams in autumn. Yeah. Probably.
I have a memory of cheating. I did only once.
Wow, you cheated and you're saying it on radio.
Yes,
on air. Wow.
I'm being so honest and I'm saying it on air.
I love your honesty.
Yes.
You're praised. Wow.
So there was only once I had this cheating thing and it was so delicious. I never forget the taste of it. You
really,
know?
Really? How?
Yes, it
was so tasty
to me.
I would love to.
And I can never forget the outcome of it.
Yeah.
I got 19, you know?
Okay.
My friend who was sitting right beside me,
you
I had a situation.
Out of 20.
Yeah, out of 20. I had a situation at night, the day before exam, so I couldn't study. Since my close friend did know about my situation, so she backed me up, and then like a brave girl, she told me, "Don't worry, I'll back you up. I'll be there." And she really was there. Now, the interesting thing is that our teacher, either she didn't hear us, or she just hear it, but she didn't care about it.
She saw, like, it's girls. So the girls are always talking in dreams. They're talking on the roads. They're talking
yeah.
with everyone. And if they're putting on wireless Bluetooth, then you never know.
So I'm telling you the process. she gave us the sheets, the exam sheets, and then my friend was reading that slightly, and I was just listening to her as we were whispering together.
Okay.
And that
she was actually reading the paper for you.
Yeah, reading the answers. Reading the answers out loud, but of course in a voice that we usually use to talk together.
That you only you heard.
Only I heard what you said. And then the nice thing is that I got 19.
Wow. And how much did your friend got?
I guess she was the same as me. I don't remember her number, you know, because
the mostly cheating, the one who guides you, yeah,
exactly.
Gets the numbers.
Yes. No, I guess, but we got the same thing.
Okay.
I know, it's a shame, and I'm so ashamed for what I did, but it was once
and forever.
Are you ashamed?
You at the same time saying that this was delicious, and at the same time you're saying
delicious,
I'm ashamed.
Delicious, yes, but I would, you know, you can have both of them together.
I think you're not calling delicious or good experience to the cheating thing itself. You're telling delicious to the
it was an adventure
guts you have.
See, it was an adventure, and that was the once and forever time that I had an adventure of cheating. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I
so
know.
So my heart was beating so fast, it was as if it was coming out of my throat.
Yeah.
And I had all those butterflies inside my stomach, even sharks, not just butterflies. So it was a difficult situation, but after all, I passed it with flying colors. Tell me about your experience.
I was in some class, 6th, 7th, I guess, and if I get caught, then...
About you yourself?
Let's take a break.
For a short break, and then we'll be back to hear Zainab's story.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, my dear friends. Well, let's listen to Zainab's story of cheating.
Yeah, well, I think I...
Now we are telling your spotty record.
We're actually confessing our crimes, you know.
Yeah.
And we may be deducing some lessons out of it in the end. I did that, obviously, but not in the school days, not in the college days, in the worst time. The more I grow older, the more I get, I don't know, asked.
Dexterous.
Yeah. So it was since this time started, the online thing. And I had put up something online. I won't say I cheated, but I did something worse than that. That was that I had a very important meeting outside, and on the same day I had exams. I had talked to the administration and all. They said, no, we can't change the dates for one student. So, like, you have to sit in the exams. You have to do it. So I tried to talk before, but since they did not cooperate and understand, I was expecting a person to be answering, and I attended my very important meeting.
Hilarious.
That I had to. Yeah, so I would also call that cheating. But I tried my level best not to do that before it, but even talking to the administration. But since they did not cooperate, so I had to.
Yeah. See, that's when you did not cooperate.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's actually come to that. Why do we do that?
Well, because we have to. There is a quote about lying. I could apply that to everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want me to lie, then don't ask me questions.
Wow. Wow, you remind me of one of the research that I had went through was saying that cheaters are actually, why they cheat? They cheat because of a lot of things. It was a psychological research that it's not just in the college that they learn to cheat or they intend to cheat. It's just much before they enter a college.
Exactly.
And why is it? It's because of the society. They have seen how society has treated cheat.
And the way they have been nurtured.
Yeah. How actually society has appreciated the wrongdoers.
Exactly.
Especially in the politics, especially in the societies or the highest social status. They see the wrongdoers, they see the cheaters. Especially this was a research done in the United States. It's David Rettinger from the University of Mary, Washington, who says that cheating is ingrained in our culture, in the culture of United States, basically, out there. And he says that it's because of seeing things going wrong in the politics, getting encouraged, and seeing much things in the society, seeing the wrong leaders. See, when you have a wrong leader who is leading, especially the a state like that of the United States, and then you know the person is a wrongdoer, is a wrong, and he was appreciated to the point that he became the leader of the society. So that way, this research has concluded that those who cheat get into the college much before they actually enter the college.
And you know, it happened to us, just like the memory I told you. Now, it was once and forever that I did that cheating, but many times I saw some of the backseaters, backbenchers. I saw them that they get the best scores, just like us, who were killing ourselves to get the A's. And then they get the same score just through cheating. And at the end of the day, we were just the same, getting the same score, getting the same appreciation. And we both were the same. Yet they were cheating and we were killing ourselves to get whatever we wish to get. Yeah, see, it was a proof to what you said. When I see a liar is going to be appreciated all the time, when I see a cheater is going to get whatever accomplishment he or she wishes to get out of the cheating they do, then I say to myself, maybe, what's the use of being so...
hard worker.
Yeah. Why do I have to go through that much of hardship? Why do I have to tear myself into pieces for the thing that I could get just like them?
So is it just because being lazy or being wise or clever that one cheats?
No way, it's not related to being wise.
So is it your laziness that you cheat?
Well, actually there are different reasons for that. Maybe one of them is being lazy. Maybe another reason is... I don't know, the situations you already said, psychological things you have in mind. Maybe you don't like something, but you have to get it, you know?
It's actually what I am getting from this discussion is that, don't you think it's the society, the competitive society that puts pressure, it's a peer pressure on a student?
No, that's a very good point. Yes, competitive society is the main reason, I would say, for cheating. Because I come to the point that I say to myself that without getting this license, for example, I am not going to get what I love. So I have to go through it just because I want the license. I want the...
It's because like you could get license another year as well.
Mm-hmm.
But don't you think it's like...
No, I cannot get it because
pressure.
I don't like it.
The peer pressure, the pressure from the society, the pressure from the parents, the pressure from everything. That you gotta succeed anyhow. You gotta pass this class. At whatever cost.
Yeah.
You gotta pass. So this pressure actually leads someone to go for cheating.
And then
I guess
who cheat at school, at university, at their job, don't they cheat at home?
Well, that's again a different story. Once if you get the guts to do this, once the way is open.
Exactly.
It's like a smoker wants to quit smoking, but the psychologists say that this is, now this person is always, even if he quits, he's very weak towards smoking. Like his weakness is again a cigarette. So it's the same thing. Like if you cheat once,
then you would have the goal to do more of cheatings.
You will have a way open to go for more of them.
So before we get into the last part, let's go for a short break and we'll be back.
Sure.
So we were talking actually of different reasons.
The competitive society.
Yeah, different reasons of cheating. And we talked about competitive societies. And we said that it has roots in the way we've been nurtured and the way we have been growing up. And also society has got such a... And most importantly, the pressure that comes from everywhere is going to lead to
there. Yeah, and I think there's also this tech that's teaching you. You know, whatever the movies you see, whatever the... Because when you see movies, I remember a lot of movies wherein you got your love in the end of the day, but through wrong means.
Like, yeah.
It's kind of like you want to reach a best cause, but through wrong ways. Your goal is okay. Your goal is actually pious.
Appreciable, yeah. But the means are not so good.
Means are not so. But are we taught that? I don't think we're taught that way in Islam. Because had that been the way, Imam Ali al-Islam could have actually not waited for 25 years to get into the leadership. So, because his goal was pious, so he could have. But acting with patience and, giving so much time was actually that, okay, even if your goal is pious, you can't go with wrong means.
So it's always good to be going through piety and being honorable, you know.
And we have been, regarding cheating as well, cheating persons. Because when you cheat exams, you can actually cheat any other thing then.
Yeah.
And then Imam Riza al-Islam says that this person is quite far away from the mercy of Allah. Then he again says a person is far away from the mercy of Allah. He emphasizes on this note, the one who cheats his Muslim brother or sister.
Yeah, which we enter the topic of fraud and deceive, which is totally a different story, and we have no more of time. In all case, cheating
in
is not
case,
a respectable thing.
Yeah.
And
we are ashamed
here,
of what we did.
Exactly. I wanted to officially claim that I am so much ashamed of what I did once in my life, but honestly,
never repeat it.
It never happened again.
It will never happen again, inshallah.
Of course, inshallah.
Accept failures.
Yeah.
Learn to accept failures
exactly.
So that they can help you.
And it's no problem to fall down and then do it again. So that's all the time that we had for today's episode. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu.
Range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is the show A to Z. For today's program, Brother Muhammad is going to talk to us about Islamic education. Stay tuned.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's discussion with regards to Islamic education, we would like to look at an important part of the nurturing process of Islamic values, and that is to nurture an important part of worship, which is Salah. Importance of Salah is indeed clear for all Muslims, as it is considered to be one of the most important acts of worship in Islam, and it is also the most regular act of worship. When we look at this important question, important aspect of nurturing Salah in the lives of our children, we as parents and educators need to keep a few principles in mind. One of those important principles is to keep away from extremism and overburdening the children with different aspects of the process. Now, on one hand, Salah constitutes of the wajib and the obligatory parts, and it also includes some of the recommended acts, and it also has etiquettes and other acts that are considered to be outside the act of Salah, but they are considered to be important addendums, important additions to the process of worship associated with Salah. For example, the prayers and the du'as that are recommended for after Salah. Or, for example, the act of praying Salah in congregation, in jama'ah, and so on. We find when it comes to nurturing Salah, for children especially, it is very important that we do not perform any kind of act that might be considered extreme and might overrun the child's capacity. So on one hand, we find within the Islamic traditions, the Holy Prophet once addressed Imam Ali alayhi salam, and he told him, "O Ali, do not make the worship of your Lord difficult on yourself." That indeed extremism and excess in an act leads to a great deal of difficulty and loss in the end. Likewise, we find when it comes to Salah, children praying Furada Salah, if that is easier on them, it is better. But also keeping in mind that Furada Salah allows the children to pray at their own speed. On the other hand, we find that we should not overburden the children with praying the nawafil, the salats that are mustahab, and those that are beyond the obligatory five prayers. And indeed, the children first need to get used to the basic aspects of salah. And these mustahabbat can be slowly and gradually introduced into the lives of the children, such that it increases in their love for salah, and they themselves are considered to have that preparedness and readiness to increase their amount of worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So indeed, as parents, it's very important for us to keep away from excess, from pressuring our children too much, and indeed keeping to the basics, to the wajibat at first, and slowly and gradually introducing the mustahabbat as the children grow and their potentials flower and their capacities grow. That is a good time to introduce other aspects and etiquettes of Salah. I hope you enjoyed today's discussion. Until next time, fi amanillah, under God's protection.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.ir.
In the limelight.
In Britain, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has warned in his New Year's message that the country's problems are not going to disappear in 2023. We will take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has the details. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has warned of an onerous year ahead, stressing that the country's problems will not go away in 2023 after a tough 12 months. Delivering his New Year message on Saturday, 31st of December, Rishi Sunak said he was not going to pretend that all our problems will go away in the new year, as the cost of living crisis and skyrocketing prices brought Britons under intense pressure during 2022. Britain's Prime Minister laid the responsibility for UK's worsening economic situation on the pandemic and the Ukrainian war. He said, "This has had a profound economic impact around the world, and the UK has not been immune." The 42-year-old Prime Minister, who took charge towards the end of October, following turmoil within the ruling Conservative Party, recalled his inaugural address on the steps of No. 10 Downing Street, reiterating his promise to work on the things that matter to Britons. He went on to promise continuing military and financial support for Ukraine amid Britain's economic struggles for alleviating the cost of living crisis. Thousands of workers in Britain have taken industrial action over low pay. Meanwhile, the leader of the opposition Labour Party, Keir Starmer, also acknowledged Prime Minister's remarks that it had been a very tough year for the country and said, "The United Kingdom needs to change." Referring to Conservatives' failure in national politics, Keir Starmer claimed Labour will attempt to build a new Britain that will fix struggling public services and grow the economy for everyone. A later message from Shadow Chancellor Rachel Reeves homed in on the wave of public sector strikes affecting transport and hospitals, and on the government's reluctance to negotiate with the unions. Rachel Reeves told The Observer, "The Tories' approach is increasingly reckless in allowing these strikes to continue with no effort to resolve them. Sitting on the sidelines is now just another way in which the Tories are sabotaging Britain's economy." The Labour Party, which has been out of government for more than 12 years, is well ahead in opinion polls following the chaotic year under Rishi Sunak's Conservative Party. People polling had the Conservatives on 26 points behind in a survey for GB News released on 30th of December, with some pollsters giving Keir Starmer's Labour Party a lead of as much as 36 percentage points. The Tories must call a general election by January of 2025 at the latest. The United Kingdom has been grappling with a staggering economy for the past few months, with inflation rate rising to record high, causing the Bank of England to raise interest rates. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story. A leading accounting company has warned that Britain's economy has already entered a protracted recession, which is set to last until the end of next year, bringing more pressure on Britons who are already squeezed by skyrocketing prices. According to the latest UK economic outlook published by accountancy firm KPMG, Britain's economy will shrink by 1.3% in 2023 amid continuing inflation and high interest rates. The international accountancy firm KPMG reckons that the rate of price increases will average 7% next year, an upward revision from 5.6% in their previous forecast. The report further predicted that the labour market in Britain will start deteriorating from the first half of next year. It said the rate of unemployment could reach 5.6% by mid-2023, up from 3.7%, representing an increase of around 680,000 people. Commenting on the KPMG's report, Yael Selfin, chief economist at KPMG UK, stressed that the increase in energy and food prices in 2022, as well as higher overall inflation, have significantly reduced households' purchasing power. Chief economist Selfin noted, "Rising interest rates have added another headwind to growth, Lower-income households are particularly exposed to the mix of current price pressures, as the most affected spending category largely fall on necessities, with few substitutes in the short run. Serfin also called on Britons to avoid buying discretionary items in 2023 in response to squeeze on income. The chief economist at KPMG, Yael Serfin, added, "The current economic situation in Britain could make it harder for some companies to absorb any potential further economic shocks in the short term," adding that the supply chain pressures are likely to remain an issue in the background. The development comes after the Bank of England increased interest rates to a 14-year high. Currently, they stand at 3.5%, and it's expected to reach at least 4% by next spring. BusinessInsider.com has also covered the same story. Retailers failed to benefit from a post-lockdown boost in UK high street activity this year after soaring energy bills and the cost of living crisis forced households to rein in their spending. Despite an increase in face-to-face shopping after the lifting of COVID-19 restrictions, Barclaycard data released for the whole of 2022 showed retail spending fell 0.8% on the previous year. The debit and credit card company said the number of transactions was up this year, but the highest inflation in four decades had resulted in smaller basket sizes as consumers sought to keep track of their budgets. A 33% increase in energy bills resulted in consumers becoming more selective in their spending, with Barclaycard reporting people cutting back on subscriptions and home improvements. Britain's annual inflation rate already stood at just over 5% at the start of 2022, but was pushed higher by the impact on gas and electricity bills of the Russia-Ukraine conflict in February. By November, it had more than doubled to 10.7%, slightly below October's 11.1%. Energy bill misery is set to continue throughout 2023 amid warnings that the cost of heat and light and electricity will remain high for a decade. According to analysis from industry experts Cornwall Insight, gas and electricity costs are unlikely to return to normal until the 2030s. The average annual bill is set to rise from £2,500 to £3,000 in April, which means families and businesses will be paying more next winter. Analysts say the surge in bills can be directly linked to the Russia-Ukraine conflict and Britain's decision to stop buying Russian gas and oil. This means Britain has become more reliant on imports of expensive gas from Norway and through shipments of liquefied natural gas, LNG, from America, the Middle East and parts of Africa.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
If you strive in the cause of God, victory will definitely follow. The following is a part of the speech delivered on June 28, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of top officials and employees of the judiciary. In the Battle of Uhud, the Muslims were victorious in the beginning of the battle. First, they attacked and crushed the enemy. But when they neglected this strait because of worldliness, the situation became reversed. Find the answer to these situations in these Quranic verses until when you become weak-hearted and disputed about the affair and disobeyed. Chapter 3, verse 152. You had rebelled and disobeyed. The Prophet told you to do something, but you did not do it. Then, when that happened, after he had shown you that which you loved, and after God had given you what you wanted, which was divine victory, and you were achieving complete victory, you behaved like that. So, of you were some who desired this world, and of you were some who desired the hereafter. Then he turned you away from them. Chapter 3, verse 152. The Almighty God acted in accordance with his divine tradition and turned you away from them. He prevented you from defeating them. And instead, you were defeated. This is another divine tradition.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
In the beginning, the divine tradition was that you stood up to the enemy's intimidations and moved forward. Then the divine tradition that applied to the situation was that due to your worldly desires, worldliness, seeking your own well-being, not working, not struggling, seeking the spoils of war and the like, you brought misery upon yourselves and others. Two verses that are close to each other in chapter. In chapter Ali Imran, talk about these two different traditions, the tradition of victory and the tradition of defeat. And the Quran is full of divine traditions. I said this, that from the beginning of the Quran to the end of the Quran, as you can see, the divine traditions are continuously being explained and repeated. They have been mentioned in different places in the Quran. Such has been the course of Allah that has indeed run before. And you shall not find a change in Allah's course. Chapter 48, verse 23.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The Center for Political and International Studies of the Iranian Foreign Ministry has organized a specialized roundtable focusing on the fight against terrorism and extremism in the West Asia region. Guests and attendees from different Iranian institutions and bodies took part in the forum, which concentrated on efforts made by the Iranian anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Among the most significant topics discussed during the meeting were fighting terrorism in the West Asia region from the point of view of international law, the role of General Soleimani in fighting terrorism in the West Asia region, and the role of the United Nations in fight on terror in the West Asia region. On the sidelines of the meeting, Iran's former ambassador to Iraq, Iraj Masjidi, highlighted the late commander's role in neutralizing terrorist groups in neighboring countries.
When Lieutenant General Soleimani was assassinated, I was working as the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Iraq. He would frequently travel to Iraq in order to confront the ISIS terrorist group and help the Iraqi armed forces and Hashd al-Sha'bi with planning and logistic support. In other words, he played a prominent role in Iraq in the fight against terrorists.
Masjidi also said that efforts to bring a prosecution against those involved in the assassination of General Soleimani continues. In this regard, the head of a special Iranian committee tasked with pursuing the case of General Soleimani's assassination in domestic and international courts said an indict on the assassination will be announced soon. He was referring to a report by a UN expert on extrajudicial killings concluding that the targeting of General Soleimani and those accompanying him constitute an arbitrary killing for which the U.S. is responsible.
Iran has had a significant role in the fight against terrorism in the West Asia region, particularly in Iraq and Syria. And Iran's top anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, played a pivotal role in combating terrorism and defeating Daesh. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Brits are still reeling from the impact of 2022. It's hard to recall a political year that's seen the country lurch from one crisis to the next. All bookended, it seems, by the saga of which particular Conservative Prime Minister was in charge. Boris Johnson had managed to cling on to power despite mounting evidence presented that his position had become untenable. His missteps during lockdown, dubbed Partygate, a faltering economy exacerbated by the outbreak of conflict in Ukraine, made his departure an inevitability. The race to replace him was brutal, exposing the deep divisions within the Conservatives. Party members chose Liz Truss over Sunak before, but that was only the beginning of the saga. Analyst Chris Bambury was following events closely and reflects on that period of chaos.
We had this strange interim where Liz Truss beat Sunak, clearly showing that a majority of the Conservative Party membership were not going to vote for Sunak for reasons which I think are fairly obvious, which are never really talked about. But Truss was a disaster. And then we ended up with Sunak being shoehorned into the Prime Ministership with no actual election.
I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party.
Ah, the blink and you'll miss it Truss era. 7 weeks of chaos which saw the pound take a hit and the markets recoil at the sheer ineptitude on political display. There was a sense that the UK's political landscape had now become a running joke.
The chaos of the Liz Truss premiership, you know, was just awesome. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that in British politics. British politics is supposed to be about stability. It prides itself in selling itself, Britain, as a brand to the rest of the world, that has been politically stable. This was like Italian politics. You know, and prime ministers just coming and going. This did not give a vision of Britain as a stable political entity.
Not content with topsy-turvy politics, the UK's longest-serving monarch, Queen Elizabeth II, passed away aged 96, leaving the UK contemplating its colonial legacy. With King Charles III with Camilla, Queen Consort, by his side, it was a new era, but one filled with old uncertainties.
I shall strive to follow the inspiring example I have been set in upholding constitutional government and to seek the peace, harmony, and prosperity of the peoples of these islands.
Despite the passing of the battle,